We're back at it again. Welcome, everyone, to The Suspendables. Jerome and Courtney Unleashed on today's show. Very important stuff. Very, very important stuff. My trip to the strippers. You can only hear it here. How about Russ and his buddies getting so hammered, they called into a radio show, and the deal breaker on a date. Okay, it did it for me. Women's hockey, it's going to fold. Russ has got some great thoughts on that. And John Brophy, the only coach in the world who could make fun of a guy in a wheelchair. But it was funny. Stick around. It's hard to believe, folks. Jungle Jim here, and Russ Courtney on the other end. Still working, Russ. Didn't get suspended.
Nice. We're just plugging away here.
I forget what I do from show to show. So if I know me, I'll end up telling the same story again. So
we know right now, we know what you're not doing between shows is fucking golfing.
Not yet, but I'm on my way to a golf trip.
Oh, no way. Really?
Where? I'm going to Caves Valley, outstanding golf course in Baltimore. They've hosted a couple U.S. Senior Opens. Anyway, eight guys, love it. I'm like, going on the golf trip. But I got, now that you remind me of that, I got to tell you a great story.
Here we go, leading off with a great story. Why don't we be the judge of that, you fucking
okay.
Idiot.
Well, you're going to like this, okay? So, guys love going on the golf trip. There's nothing I like more. You can never admit it to your wife and kids, but it really is the best thing ever. And I went on a golf trip a few years ago down to Florida and having a great time. Everyone's getting whacked, hell of a time. And there's always the one guy, Russ, on the golf trip, okay, that's, hey, you guys, let's go to the strippers. Let's do the strippers, right? And I'm not a big stripper guy, and so a bunch of guys go, okay, let's do it. And we drive about an hour north from Sarasota, and this guy's getting a little too revved up. Okay. One of these guys, like, have you never seen a girl before in your life, dude? He's got about the $405 bills for the table dances. And he's going just bananas at this thing. So we're there for hours and I've had enough. And a bunch of the guys take off and go back, and it's just me and him left there. Uh-huh. And it's time to go. Okay. we gotta go. Okay.
I'm not really into it, but we're the last two.
I'll stay with you, buddy. Okay. Okay. I'll take one for the fucking team here. Okay. I'm not into it, but I'm telling you the truth. I've had enough. We got to play golf in about 2 hours. It's 4 o'clock in the morning, and I think our tee time's 7:30. And we jump in a cab to drive back. And this guy's always, it's just like he's an alien this night he had with strippers. You know, he's an adult. We're driving down the freeway. And he spots a sign on a sort of torn down looking strip mall with a sign on top, a neon sign flashing, saying 24-hour lingerie show with an arrow pointing to the back, right? And he goes, turn the car, turn in there, Jimmy, there's a 24-hour lingerie show. I said, it's not a lingerie show, dude. Are you new or what? He goes, look at this. We get there. We walk in. There's two girls there looking a little rough, okay? And he says, $68, Jim, for a lingerie show. I said, Clark, it doesn't work that way, pal. Okay. You're going to get in there. You're going to, here's a couple hundred. It's a little different than what you think. And he goes, no, I'm fine. $68. I said, you go ahead. I'm going to lie down on the couch here. The other girl's, no, I'm good. To the other girl, no, I'm fine. I'm just going to rest here. He said, I go, look, take the dough. He goes, no, I'm good. You know, it's only a lot. I said, okay, go have at her. Okay. Okay, Russ. I'm falling asleep. I get woken up by the other girl shaking me, you know, as she's probably searching up daycares and stuff like that. Okay. While I was sleeping, and the girl comes out from the back and she goes, Jim, I go, yes, of course it's me. She goes, your friend would like to borrow $380. Oh boy. Anyway, off to the men's golf trip. So you've been on a few.
Oh my God. I in 2012, I went on an annual golf trip called the Tataway. A few university buddies decided to start this golf trip after university. And it's been going on for 30 years. And I believe Tataway means ever changing. So whoever finishes last has to plan next year's trip to a totally new, different, new golf course, new city.
Yeah.
So 2012, there's 24 of us in Pebble Beach. Yeah. and you prepay for the trip. You get your own way down there, and then you have a practice round on Thursday.
Yeah.
Wednesday, and then they have the Calcutta that night.
Right.
$156,000 in the Calcutta that
night. With 12 guys?
No, 24. 24 guys.
Jesus.
And you automatically own 25% of yourself.
Yes. What do you got to pay, though? What's the buy-in?
Well, there is one. It's an auction.
Auction.
It's a Calcutta.
Okay. So you buy your own team, of course, though.
Way to go, Trigger.
Yeah, thank
you. You've never ran a Calcutta before? Oh, my God.
Well, you can uncle a guy. You can uncle a guy and buy the other guy that you're playing against and give it the old, oh, sorry, no, we lost. So, yeah, we won $8,000.
So you automatically own 25% of yourself, no matter how much it goes for.
Right.
Anyways, we play practice round on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Saturday's the final, three rounds of golf. And my buddy, Mick Cavalier from Sherwood Country Club, who you've met, and another guy are tied on Saturday at Pebble Beach, and we're all around the 18th green.
Yes.
And it's for huge bucks, right? First place was like 58,000 or 60 grand.
Right.
So
no one's hammered. Out. No one's drinking too much.
Oh, yeah. All the guys who are out of it, the bottom 20 are absolutely shit-faced. Okay. So this is where the story's going, numbnuts.
Okay.
So we're all around the 18th green, and the head pro comes out and goes, I understand you guys have a tie. I'm going to allow you to go to the first tee box and have a playoff hole or two, sure, however long it takes, and you guys decide. So we go from the 18th to the first tee box. I don't know if you've ever been to Pebble Beach, ladies and gentlemen, but it is about 100 yards. My buddy, I'm not going to mention his name, from Calgary, hits a parked car from 18th green to first tee box. And three hours later is hauled away in handcuffs because this security guard is a wannabe cop.
Nice.
Takes him away. He gets it costs him $25,000 DUI.
Oh, my. Nice.
It's laughable now, but it was just the end to a great, great trip. But anyways, it was just ended up awful. But my buddy Mick won the pot, so it was great. He took home the cash. My other buddy lost $25,000 plus whatever he lost on the bet.
Yeah, and it's cheap. It's free, isn't it, to play Pebble? They don't have a green fee there, do they?
Oh my God!
I heard it's like $1,000 or something to play there.
We had to stay on property.
Yeah.
So we stayed at Spyglass for four nights. We ate and drank there every day and we spent a fortune. I mean, it was ridiculous. And one of our buddies, from Calgary also, he got a hole in one. We went into the tap room. It cost him $7,000.
What do you think? You got to tell us. What do you figure the trip cost you?
We figured the 24 of us spent combined $125,000. Nice. on the property. And the reason I know what we spent was I called my buddy who knows Clint Eastwood, who's one of the owners of Pebble, to complain that these 24 guys had spent $125,000 and their security guard called the cops on them and he got arrested. We didn't get a call back from Clint.
You are listening to Russ Courtnell, 20-year career in the NHL, talking about suffering through retirement.
16 years, get it right.
My favorite, a couple of my favorite stories were the guys at the prenatal class with his wife, and the instructor is telling the wives who are pregnant, saying, now listen, just because you're freaking pregnant, it doesn't give you the excuse to not exercise and jam back a bunch of freaking ice cream and all this food all day and sit in your ass. You got to get out there and exercise. You got to walk, okay? And, you know, walk, if the road's too hard, you know, walk on the grass in the park or something, you know? And then she says, and you husbands who are here, listen to me, you got to participate in this, okay? You get out there and walk with your wife too and take her for a stroll, you know? And a guy in the back of the room raises his hand and the instructor says, yes, sir. He says, listen, while I'm out there walking with her on the grass, is it okay if she carries a set of clubs at the same time?
Oh,
Yeah. And my other favorite, you know me, I was talking about a show or two ago about the cheating where the guys are having the match, the golf match, and dude is in the bush. Anyway, he slashes out, they get to the green, they putt out, and the guy says to him, got the scorecard, he goes, "What were you there?" And the guy goes, "Six." He goes, "Fuck off. Weren't you in the bush?" He goes, "Sorry about that. Yeah, 12. what else going on, Russ? I went on a date. Before we get to the hockey
stuff. No way.
I went on a date.
What was...
She's blind.
I won't go there.
She's blind. Okay. So...
Are you gonna have a second date, or was it one and done?
I'll tell you what. I don't know, because I think this is a fucking deal breaker. Okay. Nice chick,
uh-oh.
Russ. You know me. I can talk to him. I'm the best opener in the world, but I can talk myself out of anything.
Not a great listener.
Not a good listener. What'd you say? Okay. Anyway, I'm saying, Jungle, shut your trap. Let the girl talk all day about her fucking mother and all the issues she's gonna have with her mom. You know, girls. Okay. And anyway, I'm listening to her, Russ, and she's fairly animated. Okay. Now I think this is the deal breaker for me. And she's going off on everything and smiling. And I can see that this is going to be hard for me because she just wants to fucking talk about herself and the whole thing. And she's got her right elbow on the table, waving, and got her fork in her hand. Okay. Now she's chewing her food, Russ, like a fucking cow with her mouth open the time. And I'm going, nope, that's okay. That's okay. I don't mind her mouth. It's fine. Okay. She can do that. But she stops and starts to wave her fork around while she's talking to me, you know, in her hand. And then Rusty, okay, I need a slight pause here, parts her hair with the fork, with the tines of the fork. Okay. Okay.
My God.
Sitting there. Yeah. And then, and waves the fork through her hand. I'm out, Russ. I am out.
Man, no kidding.
Deal breaker.
No kidding.
Absolute deal breaker. I don't know if you've ever, you know, before you got married, if you're ever on a date or anything, that was a deal breaker. But that was it for me. So I don't know.
Deal breaker. No, I didn't have anyone who parted their hair with a fork. Sorry. Oh my God.
Anyway.
Where'd you meet her? Jenny Craig?
Yeah.
Oh my
Actually,
God.
She was a she was a little beefy, so I'd said, maybe we should go to an all-you-can-eat buffet. It may save you about $100 on grub.
anyone who's swinging their fork around, I can guarantee you they weigh about 300 pounds.
She wasn't that big. Okay.
Okay.
Anyway, listen, 250. We got some hockey stuff to get to. Couple of things we got to talk about. One is the women's hockey, and I know you have a daughter. Mm. You have two daughters and a son?
Yeah, two. Yeah, you're right. You finally got something right.
So you probably know this story, but the women who've been, you know, who have solidified themselves in the amateur hockey world, it's fantastic now. They're at the Olympics. They broke off to have a couple of pro teams, okay? And one of the teams, they should have probably only had one league. I think there was two. That there's no money to be made, okay? They're going to fold the league.
Got it.
Because it's just not viable, okay? They're only paying, I think the NHL gave each team $50,000 or something to participate in this thing. Anyway, it doesn't make any dough, so they fold it. And these women are holding out saying, you know what? The 200 girls who were in the league saying, we're not playing any pro hockey anymore. We got a huge protest against this. And so the issue is, my take, Russ, is, you know, the naysayers are going, this is a tremendous harm against women's hockey, the growth of it and all that stuff, which is kind of obvious. But my take, Russ, is too bad. It's a business and they had to fold and you guys are way ahead of yourself, you know, protesting against hockey. I think they're going to say, okay, too bad. You know, that's it. What do you think? What do you think of?
I agree with you. When you say it's a professional league, that means they're getting paid. And if the business isn't making money, you don't get paid. I mean, that's life. And unfortunately, I wish they had a league to play in. I have two daughters that play soccer and it's so fantastic to go watch them play sports. And they've played at the highest level, in college and amateur sports, and one represented her country, right. And the other one's trying. But you can't, if it's a professional league, somebody's got to own that team. And if they're not making money, you can't pay anybody.
Right.
I mean, it's just, it's a fact of life. So I don't know what they're protesting, because you can't force somebody to lose money in order for you to make money. It just, it doesn't make sense. I mean, they tried it in Venezuela. It's not working out so well down there, is it?
Yeah, that's right. It's the equivalent. I think it's the equivalent. Listen, taking nothing away from the women. I think they were
absolutely. No, of course. We love the girls'
hockey. Love the girls' hockey. I think they were just absolutely stupid to do this, you know, because people are going to say, fine, it's not going to work.
I don't know. I don't get what they're protesting because.
Yeah, I don't. Like, the two great women's professional sports are tennis and golf. Okay. They're fully entrenched here. There's no turning back. You know, it's a great professional sport. There's other women's sports too. I don't know how the basketball does, but I think the women here got out, you know, that they got, it got to their head, Russ. I don't know. What do you think their thinking is? Do they,
it honestly doesn't make sense to me that they're asking somebody to subsidize so they can make money and someone's going to lose money. So I don't understand.
Really?
You can't be a professional and expect somebody to lose money in order for you to make money. It blows me away that they think that somebody's going to step up and pay for them to play hockey and they're going to lose money.
Obvious solution for them, Russ, the obvious solution is all of them should quit hockey completely, find a man, go home, stay at home, serve your man. And when he comes home at 4 o'clock in the morning, it's his way of seeking attention, make him a sandwich and perform a sexual favor. That would be the solution to all of this, right?
Oh, fuck. And ladies, if you ever do now turn on to listen to us, Jim, this is exactly why Jim is single, living in a 4-bedroom townhouse all by himself. Do you even have a dog?
I got two.
Oh my God.
I got two fucking cats, but anyway.
Did you ever hear the story about Walter Gretzky, after he had his aneurysm, 1991, I think he had his aneurysm, but he...
Something like that.
You remember? Yeah, something like that. So Walter tells me this story. He said, I forgot everything before 1991 when I had my aneurysm.
Fuck, I wish I had that ability to forget everything.
So he's golfing.
Yes.
And he caught up to a group of ladies in front of him, and it was 5:30 in the afternoon. And he, you know, Walter, he'll go talk to anybody. So he goes up onto the tee box and he says, hi, ladies, how are you today? Isn't it a beautiful evening? And they're all like, yes, it is. He goes, what are you ladies doing? And the one lady said, well, we're golfing, of course. Mm-hmm. What do you think we're doing? And he goes, he looks at his watch and he goes, well, it's 5:30. Shouldn't you be home cooking dinner for your husbands?
Attaboy, Wally. Attaboy.
And the lady, he told me the lady chased him off the tee box and threatened him. And he said, I just had forgotten that, you know, things have changed. So kind of back to your silly story there. But anyways, old Walter, he got himself into trouble just as you probably did by saying what you said about the women, the hockey players should get married.
Listen, Russ, I've been in so much trouble on a golf course. Now, these are my drinking days, okay? So I've come up with this way, Russ, you know, a couple stories here that every guy in the golf course, we got to take a leak, okay? You're taking a leak, you're drinking beers, and so you just got to whip into the bush and, you know, and have a whiz and come back out and play. So I came up with this idea of saying, look, you know, you don't need to go in the bush. I know how to do it here, so... in the middle of the fairway, Russ, I can have a leak without anyone knowing. So what I do is I just lie down on my side, okay, and then I just whip it out, and it looks like I'm resting. You know, it works really well if you're being held up with a group. They're still in the green, and I just have a leak while I'm lying on my side. You know, you got to make sure you point north a little bit so it doesn't run back on you. So that was the best, and then I got busted. I didn't realize there was a ladies group on the other hole looking back at me. So I got booted off the golf course for not a bad way to have a leak though. So.
Well, yeah. If ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know this about Jim, he's been sober now for 3 years,
9 years,
9 years. But Jim used to play with these three guys every Saturday. He drank so much that he pissed on this pine tree out in Edmonton. He pissed on it every Saturday for about two summers in a row. And the third summer he went back and it turned into a Scotch pine.
Fuck off. I told you, I forget what I do show to show, but I said to you last time, I fucking drink. You drink so much, I swear to God, if you get cremated, the fire won't go out, okay? Listen, talking about politically incorrect when you bring this up, and Walter maybe, you know, not innocently, you know, saying this about women, shouldn't you be at home cooking dinner for everybody?
Dinner, oh my God.
Your buddy Gary Lehman, when I did a podcast about a year or two ago, I had Gary Lehman on. He was part of your hound line, wasn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
Notre Dame hounds.
And he told a fantastic story about Brophy. He was tell us about John Brophy, how weird that guy was when you played for him.
Oh, my God. John Brophy was just an animal. And he'd come in after, this was Toronto Maple Leafs in the mid-80s. He took over for Dan Maloney and he was our head coach. He was our assistant coach. And then he was our head coach after Dan went to Winnipeg. But when he was our assistant coach, Al Eifrady was a rookie. And basically I was a rookie too, because I'd only played part of the season before. So we were both rookies. And in between periods, guys who weren't playing, the fourth line really didn't play a lot. And you'd skate around in between periods. And Maple Leaf Gardens had the little, the 2-foot glass that went around the
end. Yep.
And Brophy used to stand on the bench and make Al Eifrady and I do laps. And we'd be doing laps in our end and he'd be screaming in front of 16,500 people. Periods. Faster, you bastards. Fucking skate faster.
Lehman told a story. So, I mean, it was a home run. Talking about politically incorrect now, okay, folks, is what we're talking about.
Oh, my God.
And the team's going bad, and he can imitate. He sounded like Mickey Mouse, I guess, right? John Brophy when he spoke.
Oh, yeah.
And Lehman can imitate him perfectly. I may have to find it, the cast we did, and I'll put some of it in the next one. And Lehman's saying, Brophy's going bananas. He's in the locker room. You're down six. Yeah. The game's over. So there's the entourage, you know, all the wannabes and all the male groupies like me trying to stuff themselves into the locker room at the end of the game. And Brophy's trying to shove them all out. And he's ready to go ballistic on the team. And there's a guy there with a fella in a wheelchair that he's pushing into the locker room right when this is happening. And Brophy's going bananas and he sees the guy out of the corner of his eye. And he grabs the guy in the wheelchair, wheels him around, shoves him out the door while he's screaming, you know what? We got enough cripples in this locker room. Get out of here. Isn't that true? Were you there?
I don't know. The story I heard was he was in Sherbrooke. And was it Sherbrooke or Halifax he coached in the minors? And this fan who was crippled in a wheelchair wanted to come into the locker room and wish them good luck in the playoffs. And so this kid wheels into the room. And he had done it the year before and they lost the game. So he turned the chair around and fired him outside as the guy's wheeling across the hallway, smashes into the wall. And he goes, you unlucky bastard. You came in here last year and jinxed us. We're not fucking losing this game, Kathy. he used to come in to the locker room and we were the lowly Leafs, right? And he would scream and yell and curse. And so we had a really shitty first period and which wasn't, you know, it was almost typical, but so he comes in the locker room and Kenny Reggett's sitting at the door and he comes in, shuts the door, turns the lights out in the locker room. It is completely black. You can't see the guy beside you. And he goes, if you're going to fucking sleep out there, you can fucking sleep in here. And he slams the door shut. And someone, I think Boris Selmy said, Kenny, turn the lights on. He turns the lights on and half the guys are down with their head between their knees, covering themselves because Brof usually threw sticks.
I love that. So I love that.
Oh, everybody went for cover because they were expecting the sticks to
Gotta love a coach like that. Gotta love a guy like that. So many stories, you know.
You want me to tell the Harold Ballard, Wendell Clark story?
You know when you say that you're going to tell the story. Of course I do. Of course I do.
Yeah. Wendell and I were single, playing for the Leafs, and we'd stay after practice, shoot pucks, have a shower, joke around, go out for lunch. So we're in the medical room, and through the medical room is the mirror where all the guys would blow dry their hair and get all primped up, right? So Clarkie and I filled up the hair dryer with baby powder. So we're sitting there, two young guys, shouldn't have done it, but we're doing it. And we're waiting for guys to come out of the shower. They're going to blow dry their hair or you get covered in baby powder. Fuck, Harold Ballard, our owner, walks around the corner, looks in the mirror. He's got a beautiful suit on with this silk tie. He's looking in the mirror. He's like ready to go for lunch somewhere. And he looks in the mirror. He picks up the hair dryer and Clark goes, oh, no. And he hits it on high, completely drenches him in baby powder. Harold turns around. Both Wendell and I are thinking we're getting fired, not traded. We're getting fired. And we're looking at him like, oh, my God, oh, my God. Our dog just got hit by our neighbor's car outside our house. We're looking at the guy. Oh. And he goes, now that's a good one.
Oh, nice.
He liked it.
You're reminding me of Sather. Of course, most of the stories I know, the closest I ever got to the NHL was being, you know, was following guys around in Edmonton. Sather Slats, as he's known, coming into training camp, he goes down the first day, and Grant Fuhr, who arguably was the best goalie to ever play in the NHL, if not number one, he was right up there, and how good he was. But he never did much over the summer, Russ, okay? He loved to play. Fuhrzy loves to play golf, and he comes into camp, and he's 28 pounds overweight, okay, when he steps on. He's a fat fuck, as Slats calls him. And Sather, you must have some sort of story here about what coaches do to guys who are out of shape, but Sather says, meet me up on the concourse tomorrow morning, okay, at 8 o'clock, and put a sweatsuit on. And so Slats goes up there. He had rented one of those automatic tennis ball serving machines. Okay. He had a net set up there. He's got the towel around his, he puts the towel tucked into Fierzy's neck. He's got the full sweatsuit on. He puts another jersey over him, puts another pair of sweatpants on him. The guy's roasting to death and proceeds to, from about 18 feet away, fire fucking tennis balls at him for an hour straight. To get him back. He lost almost the whole weight at the same time, you know. Crazy. Love that story.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Poor Fuhrzy.
Ally Frady came to camp over about 35, 40 pounds overweight when he was second or third year. So that was back when we did two-a-days. And after the first session, John Brophy, his assistant coach, comes in and goes, come with me. And he takes him into the basement of the restaurant at the Hot Stove Club in the Maple Leaf Gardens. I didn't even know there was a freaking sauna down there. So he goes, just take your skates off and come with me. So there's Al walking with Brophy through Maple Leaf Gardens, into the basement, gets him in a sauna. In the sauna, he has a bike, a stationary bike. He's got the sauna cranked as high as it'll go. He goes, get on that fucking bike and start riding, you fat fuck. You're going to lose your weight. So Al Iafrady's riding the bike. And John Brophy is outside looking through the little glass window. Yep. And then opening the door and yelling, keep it at 30, you fat fuck. And then shut the door. Al would be pedaling away. He's beet red. He looks like a freaking tomato. Actually, a red Goodyear blimp on the bike, sweating away. And he did that for 2 days. And then Al quit and drove home to Detroit. He's like, I this guy's psycho. I quit. And he quit. And then Dan Maloney drove all the way back to Detroit and picked up Al and brought him back. And get this, Okay. They sent John Brophy to the freaking minors and brought up the head coach, Claire Alexander. So that year, Claire Alexander was our assistant coach, and Brophy was the head coach in the minors.
Oh, Jesus. I love, God, you're bringing me, Dave Semenko, of course, God rest his soul, right? who was so funny. So funny.
Oh, played for the Oilers. I played with him, and I played with him in Toronto. I was there. I was there the night he quit in Vancouver and flew back. He retired.
Well, he was a mainstay, obviously, with Gretzky and the Oilers. You know, one of the toughest guys in the league, and very funny, very funny.
Oh boy!
You know? And he gets traded to Hartford from Edmonton. Slots had to trade him, and he gets traded while they're on the plane. Actually, Slats just steps on the plane and knows, and he calls Semenko up to the front of the plane and says, "Listen, the word's out when you get back. I'm sorry to tell you, but you got traded to Hartford." You know, and Dave, who's a very very unemotional guy, you know, was says, "This is the most emotional I've ever been. You know, I was really upset, and I got off the plane not knowing what had hit me here to a throng, something like 30 or 40 reporters there, you know, to ask Dave about the trade, you know, and he says, I'm trying to wipe up the tears. Yeah. And, I get into the scrum with the reporters, and as only Dave can do it, the reporter right away says, Dave, how do you think the fans are going to take this? They loved you here. And he goes, oh, nothing short of the Richard riots, I'm sure. Fucking Semenko, he didn't get a bunch of time, of course. If you don't know the story, you know, he was the goon back in the day, right? Tough guy. And would play very limited amount of time, you know, and he he always said, you know, if not for me, Gretz, you were nothing, you know. But he used to come into the locker room, Russ, apparently, and you know, take his gear off, slowly somber over, you know, put the pregame sweats on and shit like that, and then throw his flip-flops on, walk back to the seat and grab the Edmonton Sun, you know, and start to flip through it. Yeah. They could overhear him going, lottery numbers, you know, flipping through the paper, lottery numbers, and then scope down, you know, put his finger across to look for him, and then go, bow his head and go, ah, fuck. Lace him up again, trainer. Put him on. I got to go, I guess, tonight. the story. Go ahead.
I used to drive him home after practice when he played in Toronto, and I'd drop him off, and he lived right down on the water on the lakeshore downtown Toronto. So I'd drive down, and he'd go, oh, no, stop right here at a bar. And he goes, I'll see you tomorrow, pal. He lived in the building next door. He goes, the location here is incredible. And the next day we'd be at practice, and he would be so hungover, and he'd be chewing. He always was chewing gum. And he's like chewing. And he stops. We're doing some drill, and he stops and he takes the gum and he looks at it and he goes, I'm sorry, this is a losing battle, isn't it? And throws the gum up into the stands. He just freaking reeks.
When Glenn Anderson retired, he had a deal here, you know, and Glenn Anderson, okay, loved a fucking party, man. This guy was a great guy. I love Glennie Anderson, you know, prolific hockey player. He's in the Hall of Fame, isn't he? Didn't Andy go into the Hall of Fame?
He should be.
Anyway, he has a 2-day party here, and everyone gets together at a restaurant. And he invites me down to do some shtick, and he invites a bunch of guys down. And so this is a few years ago, and Dave Hunter shows up, who's post-retired now. And Hunt says he might be 300 pounds. Okay. He might be, okay. He might be 350. I don't know, but he's just massive now. And he walks into the room, and Semenko is up at the mic, telling a couple stories about Glennie. And he glances down at the end of the room and sees Dave Hunter there. And, you know, and he looks up, he goes, oh, hello, Hunt. All of us here just want to congratulate you that you've clearly fought the demons of anorexia.
Oh,
I love this show, Russ. I love this. Yeah, this is the book. God. This is the book you were going to write, but we're doing it on the podcast.
Oh my God. Did I tell you about my brother? My brother called Mark Birchman. Did I tell this story?
Nope. Go ahead.
You're going to probably hear a lot of repeat stories because
I tell stories the same all the time. Suffering. My sister goes, "Where are you from, Repeaterville?"
Yeah. Jeff calls Mark Birchman. They're super tight. He's the GM of Montreal Canadiens now, and they're super tight.
Right. Yeah. And your brother, of course, Jeff Courtnell, played in the league for many years. Yeah.
So he called Bergy, and Bergy's not returning Jeff's calls. And so the last message was, "Hey, Bergy, I just need to talk to you about chapter 5 of my book that's coming out in a month. So hurry up and call me back." Bergy called him back in like 5 seconds. "What book?" He goes, "No book. I just needed you to call me. Thanks."
Perfect. Well, Jeff was the best. Anyway. Best. You got to tell the story about your brother, and then we'll get out of here. You got to tell the story about your brother with the deal with the Christmas decorations and a neighbor or something like that. And
oh my God.
You remember this?
So our neighbors in Victoria were at dinner with two other couples, the Oak Bay Marina, and they lived about a mile and a half from the Oak Bay Marina in the Uplands, beautiful neighborhood. And Benj O'Connor's his name, a big lawyer in Victoria. It's right around the holiday time.
Right.
Benj has just hung all his decorations, spent 2.5 weeks freaking hanging them up.
Right.
And he goes, "Don't order dessert. We're going to have dessert at our house, and I want you to see my Christmas decorations." So they all follow Benj back to his house. He gets to the house. It's pitch black. There's not a light on anywhere. So he gets everybody out on the road, says, "Oh, the breaker must have went off." So he goes in the garage. He's hitting the switches. Nothing. He goes closer. There's no Christmas light. Somebody's stolen them all. So he gets everybody in the house. He calls the cops. The cops come. They're looking all over the neighborhood for these young punks that have stolen all his decorations.
Yeah.
My brother lived across the street and down three houses.
Right.
They go by his house, and the bench goes, "Those are all my lights. That's my reindeer. That's my Santa. That's my snowman." And everything is displayed on Jeff's house. The cop and him go up to the front door, and then they ring the doorbell. Jeff comes down, pretends he's half asleep, and goes, "Yeah, can I help you? What's wrong, Benj? Something happened?" And he goes, "Yeah, you stole all my Christmas decorations." He goes, "I don't know what you're talking about." "Oh, yeah, oh my God, somebody's playing a joke on you, Benj. I don't know what's going on. I've been asleep for 2 hours." Jeff and his two boys, they stole every freaking light off his house and then proceeded to put it on his own house.
Well, too funny. Because if Jeff, I've been with your brother, right? He's like sleeper, right? I'm going 100 miles an hour. Everyone's telling jokes, ripping each other back and forth. And your brother will just sit there. And if someone's over the top, like you hear someone that's over the top about their stories, like this guy would have been bragging about his Christmas decorations, you could just see a little light go in his eyes going, "I got a good fucking idea."
Oh, yeah. I'm going to get this guy.
Before we're jamming, Packer Rooster, before we go, you were there. Speaking of guys who were great storytellers, Marty McSorley, very funny. Of course, played with the Oilers. Yeah. And one of my funniest was at Wayne's fantasy camp. Wayne Gretzky had a fantasy camp for 15 years where guys paid 10 grand to go play hockey with Wayne. And you were a huge part of that. And he invited a bunch of different pros. And I should have recorded sitting in the locker room with all the pros, and you're telling stories, and Eddie Mio is sitting there, okay, exhausted
because
he went and skated a lap and a half with his equipment. He comes in, looks like he's going to fucking die, and Marty's ripping him. He's just sitting at his bench, at a seat in the locker room, and Marty is ripping him left and right, you know, and Eddie, who hasn't said shit in 8 years of this fantasy camp, and he finally stands up. He's got his breath back. And he points at Marty after taking all this shit from him. He goes, "I'll tell you what, Marty, you never fucking scored on me." And before his ass hits the seat again, Marty goes, "I never shot at the bench."
Oh my God. That I was there for that that little back and forth, but I was telling the story how two caddies who are playing golf with Eddie and Gretz, and they're, "Hey, Gretz, who did you score against the most? What goalie?" And so, you know, Gretz, he's got every number, every stat. And he went from top to like top 10 right. goalies, right? Yeah, I scored 80 on this guy. I scored 65 on him and 54 and 28 and 60. He's going down the list. And Eddie pipes up and says, well, you only got 4 against me, Gretz. And he goes, yeah, I only played you once.
we'll end it with this. Speaking of that, when Wayne, I was at an event with Wayne doing a hot stove. And again, we might have told this story before, but fuck it. It's that good. And we go in the crowd, you know, you want to ask a question to Wayne. And the guy says, hey, Wayne, who's the toughest goalie you ever faced? And Gretz goes, pauses. I never find any of them very fucking tough. Folks, this is awesome, Russ. This is my favorite show so far. You've been listening to He Said, He Said with Russ Cortinel and me, Jungle Jim. We're just getting rolling. I think it's our fourth show now, Russ. Good job, Rusty. Carry on. I got housework to do. You probably don't even know what that fucking is housework. Huh? Have you ever done, do you anything around the house? Anything handy? Do you garden or?
I do. I like to cook. I like to cook. And I am capable of doing laundry if I have to. But garden work, no.
We're out of time, Rusty. We filled it.
Oh, boy.
All right, brother?
I think there's better places than Jenny Craig to go for to find a date. I know you're trying to stay away from places that serve alcohol, but Jenny Craig's probably not the place you want to go looking for dates, okay?
Well, my old play was I date homeless chicks because it's way easier to get them to stay overnight. So. Oh, God. That's enough. That's enough out of us.
All right.
We'll see you next time.
Good night.
You are bringing it today, Rusty. You are really bringing it today. That was great stuff once again. How about Sather with the tennis ball machine against Fierzy? You can only hear that stuff here. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next week with another episode of The Suspendables, Jerome and Cortinel Unleashed.